Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, we're taking your calls. I'm pontificating on many subjects, and we'll do a round of Eat Your Feelings as well. Gina delivers in a big way. I don't know, spoiler alert, but enchiladas, which I love. All right, I'll tell you about all that stuff in a second. First, LifeLock, April 15th. Well, that used to be the tax deadline. Then they pushed it back to July 15th. But the extension just gives the hackers more time. More time to mine your data and sell it. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives. You need to protect yourself. It's 2020. Everyone drives a car, and it's awesome, and it's convenient, and it's safe, but you need car insurance. Fine. That's the price of doing business. Okay. You're going to be on the internet. You're going to be buying everything on there. Your info's going to be out there. You need a little insurance, and that insurance is called LifeLock. Right, Dawson?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. LifeLock can see threats you might miss on your own. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year by using promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LifeLock or head to LifeLock.com. Use promo code Adam for 25% off.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat. Stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
The evil bitch that is coronavirus may still be raging outside, but Carolla Drinks is hard at work with another month of Adam's Monthly Nut. This month includes a Beard Bro beard shaping tool to tame that unruly corona facial hair, and a Chew face mask, so you can silently protest how f***ing stupid all of this is. A 6-foot premium beer bong by beerbong.com, so you can slug back a few cold, endless rants when the world officially opens up again. And of course, a bottle of your choice. We know times are tough, but we at Carolla Drinks are here to remind you to take a breath, have a drink, and wait for all this shit to be over. Mahalo. From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is The Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, country music superstar Luke Bryan. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Bryan on sound effects, and Dave Damashek's here for good sports. And now, he's against Chaz because he grew up in an autonomous zone with zero authority figures. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice, we got a mandate. You get it on, man. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for sharing. We appreciate that. I should say sharing. I made it into a woman's name. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
Handball, Brian.
Yay!
I think there was a cologne in the 80s called Chaz. Now,
Chaz?
Yeah.
A cologne of what?
A cologne.
Oh, a cologne. Sorry. I said a cologne. I'm like, okay.
A cologne. Here we go. Chaz Bono.
Now, it wasn't Charlie, because we all know kind of young, kind of wow, Charlie. I think there was like a.
You can still get it at Walmart.
You still get Chaz at Walmart?
Was it a knockoff? That would make sense, right? Chaz, yeah. Charlie.
Chad?
I don't know. It was like an 80s. I think they had a like a Western motif. They either go with a nautical theme or Western theme. To me, the nautical is a much better smelling theme than the Western theme. I think of leather and horses and cow shit and guys who bathe in a creek. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if I want to associate myself from a scent standpoint with the old West, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Although, do you know what plant is considered cowboy cologne? Because when they'd go horn in town, they would rub this plant all over themselves. Sage. And they just rub it all. It's cowboy cologne.
Chaz, it says here, is a memorable cologne for men that is known for its exotic woodsy scent with high notes of lavender and citrus.
Tom Selleck did Chaz. He's got the cowboy boots on. He's got
the tux.
got the tux. He's got the cowboy hat.
And a random stick.
A random divining rod.
Also available at CVS.
Still around.
Is he the original world's most interesting man? Because it says Chaz, the fragrance that's almost as interesting as the men who wear it.
Interesting and memorable are not great descriptors for a cologne.
Well, they're creating the perfect masculine blend. It was introduced in 1975. It's a gentle, warm cologne, and it lets you explore your playful side while maintaining an air of cool confidence. Apply Chaz in the morning before a big meeting at the office and enjoy the energy it brings to your day.
I feel I'll take a crate. Yes, Brian.
I want to paint the picture for everyone just so they know where we're coming from. Chris, put the picture back up of Selleck. He's in a tuxedo with cowboy boots, the cowboy hat, on the like sitting casually on the hood of a car, holding a tree branch, but like a small, like one that would have fallen off on your lawn and annoyed you. Like, what is the stick? That's neither fish nor fowl. It's not a staff. It's not a wand. It's just a fucking branch.
Yeah,
the fuck is that?
If you're holding a riding crop, there's other implications sexually. You know what I mean? Number one. Number two, I'll guarantee what this is. First off, I'm looking at this picture. You can barely see the car, but I guarantee that is a Ferrari Dino that he's sitting on top of. And we'll have to blow it up to see if we can figure it out, Max Webb. But I'm thinking he's sitting on a Ferrari Dino. Now, obviously, he drove the Ferrari 308 in Magnum. So I don't even know if there's a Ferrari connection here. And is this pre-Magnum? And did they randomly choose a Ferrari, which sort of the precursor to the 308 was the Dino?
While he's finding that, one more interesting point about Chaz the cologne. When you think about recommended use, when it says recommended use, what do you expect to find there? Maybe a spray, walk through it.
I know from watching Universal, like household cleaners, the recommended use is countertops, bathrooms, RVs, vans, yards, cars, and then pause, or anywhere, which I always say, go ahead and start with anywhere.
Well, you're on the right path, because for Chaz the cologne, the recommended use is daytime.
Wow.
That's like the Tabasco, the back of the Tabasco bottle used on eggs, meat, steak, chicken, or anything.
Oh, is that the Dino?
No, that's the 308. So this is a later Chaz. You may already have won this $60,000 Ferrari. So this must be Tom Selleck during the Magnum PI years.
For sure.
Because he's on top of the Magnum PI car.
They're leveraging.
The earlier one was probably earlier Chaz stuff where he's on just a random Dino Ferrari. Anyway.
I smell this.
It just popped in my head after hearing Chaz three or four times in the last week that there was a scent called Chaz. I forgot all about the Selleck part of it. So Selleck, Max Pata, must have signed up for Chaz maybe before.
Yeah, these ads are from 79. So
79.
Let me see when he did the show.
Randomly on a Ferrari. All right. I had a couple interesting thoughts I would like to share with you. Speaking of vehicles, I've been telling everybody. So everyone always, Dr. Drew especially, but many, many others, they come to me all the time and they go, where's this thing heading? Where's this going as a society? Where are we heading? Like Drew's says that almost every time I see him because he's worried. And because for the last, I don't know, 25 years, I've been sitting next to Drew going, here's where we're heading. Here's where we're heading. So he wants answers in advance of when we get there. I have said that for every safe space, there's going to be an octagon is going to pop up. You guys have heard me say this. Right. We're taking a group. One group is being driven towards safety at a record speed, and the other one's out doing a tough mutter or climbing into an octagon. I mean, there's more jiu-jitsu dojos have popped up over the last 5 years than there have been soft swirl ice cream places or froyo places. I mean, there's literally one on every corner now. Another thing I started to notice is my theory is whenever you try to push society one direction, then the other pops up. The whole Father Knows Best, pomade in the hair, cardigan, smoking a pipe gave way to Vietnam hippie movement, and Vietnam hippie Leonard Skinner, Neil Young movement gave way to preppy, you know, movement. And let's not forget, man, preppy, 1979, 1980. Remember that look? What could be more different than the Vietnam counterculture than preppy? Popped collars, wearing two Izod lacrosse shirts, penny loafers.
Think James Spader and Andrew McCarthy.
Right. Yeah, in a stairwell, smoking at school.
Sport.
Listen, sport. She's not from the right side of the tracks. You understand?
If you want to go slumming, that's your business.
Yeah. Now, I looked at her dad's FICO score. You understand? You think you're going to let a chick with a four? Her dad's got a 483 FICO suck your dick? I don't think so, sport. Because that's what high school was like for all of us, right?
Oh, right. Oh, yeah. Same. Yeah.
That was a documentary, right?
Yeah. You know, there also was a lot of back in the day that is almost never, I've almost never encountered in real life. Every third movie I saw, at some point when school let out or the church doors opened or the dance hall was closed or the bar, there was always some dude sitting on your car fender smoking. I've been waiting for you, man. Like, hey, man, I don't want any trouble. I've never had that happen once where I've just went outside and someone's randomly be sitting on my car going, hey, Adam, I wanted to talk.
That's the teenage version of walking into a house and just having someone turn the light on already sitting there in the living room.
Right, right. There was a lot of waiting out by the car. I don't know. And also, how are you so sure of this person's schedule? You know what I mean? Like, you're going to plant your ass on the fender of their car. Maybe they have volleyball practice right after school.
Yeah.
Maybe they have maybe there's a swim meet or band practice. Yeah. Maybe they're getting in a bus and going to the other side of town. You may be sitting there for 4 hours.
Just to be safe, pack a snack.
That's right. So, anyway, it just reminded me of James Spader waiting by Molly Ringwald's car for her, explaining, you know, how he knows she wants him. All right. So I was thinking about cars, and I was thinking about that counter to everything. So, you know, more safe spaces, more octagons, right?
It's Newton's third law of motion. For every action, there's an equal opposite reaction. You know what I mean? There's the pendulum swings, and it swings, you know, together and then apart.
And it's true that now we're living in a time when the counterculture has become the culture. The prevalent culture is sort of the counterculture, and that's the reason dickheads like me can write a book and be at the top of the charts on Amazon, because it's counter to the counterculture, which is now the culture.
The culture.
So I was thinking about it, and I was driving around, and I watch things. I just watch commercials, and I want to know where we're going as a society all the time. I have noticed quite a few off-road vehicles, especially Jeeps with big old mudder tires, and the fenders have been pulled off, and they have the lift kit and the suspension lift and everything on it. And I thought to myself, where are all these big off-roading Jeeps coming from? And I realized, because I've seen like a fivefold increase of guys driving around with knobby tires and big lift kits on their Jeeps and trucks and everything else lately. And, you know, we live, you know, we're in Southern California. We're not in Montana. We're not up in the hills or anything. And I thought to myself, every time somebody tries to force somebody into a Prius or tell somebody they need to drive an electric car, two more guys modify their Jeep. Like, they just go out and get the Jeep. So that's why I'm seeing more. And when you guys go out today or tomorrow, whatever, keep your eyes open. You're going to start seeing these, not just a stock showroom Jeep Cherokee. I'm talking about doors off, big mudder tires, fenders pulled off, and the whole nine yards, because they are now pushing back against everyone who told them to get a Prius or tells them they're going to need to drive an electric car. So, I'm not defending the Jeep guy. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of money. It makes a lot of noise. You're not even using the car as you should. They are doing their own version of signaling. It's not virtue signaling. It's just signaling. Like, hey, DiCaprio, tell me to get in a Prius. I'm going to put a lift kit on my Jeep and drive it up and down the street. Yes, right. Brian.
It's more about the reaction. I remember, I was just thinking about the other day. How many years ago was it? 2-3 years ago, when the movement away from incandescent bulbs to LED bulbs was like really starting in full force. Mm-hmm. And like, I remember like there were like, you know, opinion hosts on the late night cable who were freaking out. They like the clips were making the rounds like, don't take my light bulbs away from me. It's like, do you really care about light bulbs that much? Or are you reacting, you know what I mean, to being told what to do and be to the movement, you know what I mean? This is the new thing. It's like, don't tell me what to do. I'm gonna cling on to my whatever the thing is at the moment. It happens to be fucking light bulbs.
Yeah.
Or Jeeps or whatever it is. You know what I mean? It's a reaction.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not about the light bulbs. I don't even know. See, I don't even know if the guy who decides to go get a Jeep is consciously knowing what he or she is doing. Mm-hmm. They're just reacting. They're pushing. They're kind of doing a move that dogs do when they get hold of a rope chew toy. They just pull, and then you turn one direction, they're pulling north and south, and you go the other direction, they're pulling the opposite direction. They're just, they're pulling. They don't even really know what they're doing. You can go in a circle, as we've all done with a dog. They don't have a destination. Right. Their thing is, I need to pull. And I think the folks that go out and get the Jeeps just want to pull. I don't know how conscious they are of it. But anyway, it's interesting that our counterculture has become almost the norm now. And I was also thinking about something. Country superstar Luke Bryan is going to be on the show today. I think I should tell you guys. I was out hawking my book, and you got an audio clip you want to play, Dawson? I don't even know what this one is. Fencing?
Yeah.
Fencing.
You cover a lot of bases in this, and you're talking about...
I was thinking of like cyclone fencing or dog-eared fencing.
Well, like on guard.
We will also get there in clip. But yeah, this is mainly how to make Olympic fencing better.
There we go. I've long complained about Olympic fencing and have a fix that involves some cultural garb. But first, a jag on the sport itself. I realized during the 2012 Olympics, when all we could talk about was swimming and Michael Phelps, that fencing was done. It's sword fighting. It should have been the most exciting event, but all we're talking about was swimming. One problem is that it's over before it begins. The fencers stand 8 feet apart, someone hits an air horn, and by the time you blink, they're taking their masks off. You don't even know who won or why. No one ever gets cut, then tastes their own blood and announces, "Now I shall avenge the death of my father." I can fix this. First, you know there's a compulsory part of skating when the skaters have to pull off certain moves? We should do the same with fencing. To start, the fencers would have to slice all the candles off a candelabra, followed by the part in which they flip their opponent's sword to him with their foot after he drops it. Then they would close by putting a Z in the opponent's shirt without cutting him and slashing a rope to drop a chandelier that traps 8 henchmen. Here's my second solution, which I'm genuinely in love with. This is not a joke. We should make the Olympian fencers wear the garb and use the weapons associated with their nation's history. How high would the ratings be if instead of 2 guys in beekeeper's costumes, it was a contender from Japan in a samurai kimono with a katana going up against a Norwegian athlete wearing a Viking helmet and a fur vest and wielding a battle axe? A French Olympian would be dressed as the 4th musketeer with a thin pointed blade, while the Saudi competitor would be holding a giant scimitar and wearing the outfit of the guy who got shot by Indiana Jones in Raiders of the Lost Ark. I know this would work. It would have to, because right now Olympic fencing is less interesting than watching Mexican day laborers putting up actual fencing. Oh, there you go. My solution to Olympic fencing.
I'll watch that.
It is insane that there's, if you really just break it down, watching people swim is about the most boring activity you can watch somebody. I know it's a race, but I just mean the actual activity of swimming is really super fucking boring, and the activity of sword fighting is really super exciting. How is it that you don't want to watch sword fighting and you do want to watch swimming? And they completely sterilized it. That was the problem.
I think it's one works well on TV and one doesn't. Like when you have the swimmers in the Olympic pool and you can see the race, it works. But when they're fighting with those thin little blades, like you said, you can't even tell what's going on. You're like, oh, did he get him? And then like the light lights up. I was like, oh, I guess he got him. It's hard to watch.
They're kind of wearing the same outfit. It's too safe. And they do one lunge at each other and then they stop again. Now they're even wearing some sort of leash or something. They have some sort of cord on their ass that doesn't let them progress more than 6 feet. Yeah, it's like a surfboard leash type around their
like
waist.
Tether.
A tether. All right, let's see. Real estate. Oh, we got a couple calls up here. Nathan, 30, Miami. Oh, I should tell everyone, go get that book and leave a review on Amazon. It just helps. It's in the top 10 right now, and it's because of you guys. So thank you for that. I'm not sure what happened to the calls, Max Pata, but I'll just hit Nathan here on memory. Nathan?
Hey, Adam. How you doing?
Good. Miami, what's going on?
So I had a question for you. I know you talked about how you worked for many, many years pretty hard before you found, you know, real comfortable financial success. And I don't know if it was incremental or you had a big windfall, but I went from about a good 7 years working at a salaried position to kind of going on working on my own in real estate. And I'm about to make my first real big commission, which is going to be significantly bigger than any of my past annual salary. So I just
what is that? Can you tell us that number?
Oh, yeah. So I used to make about a salary of about between like 75 topping out of 85 a year. And this is going to be close to $100,000, this commission.
All right. So that's good. Good for you. And yeah, if people want to go out and watch not Taco Bell material, which I think you can get on, I don't know, you probably get on Chassis and or Amazon or something like that. I think it's on one. It might be on Amazon, too.
Yeah. Anywhere you
go. I go over my whole Social Security statement. So you can see that I made nothing. And then
Adam Carolla will show his tax returns. Why won't Trump?
That's right.
There was a precipitous jump in the mid 90s.
Yeah. Maybe you can pull a still of that Max Pat up if that's possible. But anyway, good for you, Nathan. And the question is what?
No. So if you had, in your experience, you went from having not much money to, you know, all of a sudden having a lot of money. You know, there's probably a lot of impulses and a lot of, you know, great ideas that pop into your head all at once. You know, sort of, you know, it seems like it worked out for you. Did you have any insight or anyone give you insight how to pump the brakes and then use this source of funds? Obviously, I want to put some back into my business so I can continue to make more money in the future. I do want to invest in myself a little bit.
Yeah.
So just any general, you know, idea how to, you know, use this wisely, use this opportunity.
Hey, everybody. His name is Nate. He's coming from Miami. He does commercial real estate. He also does, you do commercial real estate. They call it TI. That's tenant improvement. Now, tenant improvement, TI is obviously the rapper, but we're getting into the weeds here. James, State 7, James. Here's what my advice would be. When I finally made money, I was basically a poor person that was living in a rich person's body, trapped inside. And so I, you know, and for good or for bad, you know, the first new car I bought when I made money was a 3-year-old Nissan. I literally was like, a Nissan Maxima that was 3 years old was my idea of a new car. Like, I got it from a dealership and it has air conditioning. And it was so crazy. And as I've told the story, when they had the big party at the Playboy Mansion, we missed the Playboy Mansion. When I came pulling up to the Playboy Mansion for the Loveline big premiere party, and I pulled up in my 3-year-old Nissan Maxima, and the producers are like, what the fuck are you driving a Datsun for? I'm like, this is almost a new car. It's got a V6 in it. Like, and they're like,
new to me.
They're like, you're in Hollywood, man. You're on TV. You should be driving a BMW or something. So it took a long time to acclimate, you know, and maybe there's, and it's a two-way street. So I would say, don't think like your former poor person self, and then don't think like someone who makes 10 times as much as you make now. Try to think commensurately with what you're making. You know, we all kind of understand that guys get into trouble when, and also they have this feeling of like, this is never going to end. You know what I mean?
It's, yeah. And that's what I'm worried about. I don't want to just blow through this, and then I want to really focus on pushing it towards future business, and definitely want to make that a focus.
I'll say the same thing to you, Nathan, that I used to say to people on Loveline all the time. We'd get a call once a week where some guy would call in or some gal would call in and go, I'm going to be a parent in 2 months and I want to make sure that I do everything right, or I have a newborn and I just want to make sure that I don't do anything wrong. And I was like, look, if you're calling and asking, you're covered. If you are calling and saying, please guide me, I want to make sure that I can be the best parent I can be, I don't worry about you. My problems are solved with you. You're asking. You know what I mean? It's all the fucking deadbeat dads that moved to Florida who go, what do you mean? My daughter loves me.
Yeah. If they got to figure it out.
Right.
I talked to her almost once a year.
Right.
Almost.
Right. So that's so Nathan, if you're saying I want to be responsible, I want to be cautious, but I want to allocate money toward the business, you're already there. You're there. Go. There's a million things online you can look up. I'm not a financial expert. My feeling is sort of bet on yourself and then rise to the occasion. And I'll give you an example. I bought my first house after being, so I was dead poor my whole life. At a certain point, I was living in an apartment in the Valley with a roommate, Cortland Cox from Below Deck. And we were living in this apartment together, and I owed the IRS $5,000, and that was about it. And I started making money, and I started saving my money. And the second I paid off the IRS and then was able to save up, I think it was about $50,000, I immediately bought my first house. And it was $350,000, and it was in the Hollywood Hills, and it was old house from 1923, Hollywood land, and it was a mess, and it was broken up badly, and it needed structural. It wasn't cosmetic. It was structural, and it was a lot of stuff that was really bad, and I won't bore you guys with all the details, but I mean, it was a house from 1923 in the Hollywood Hills that was a broken down mess, and the more I got into it, the more it needed. Stuff sagging, stuff hanging, you know, stuff needed to be replaced. Walls that were were tilting in the wrong direction, and major, way beyond cosmetic. And at the very end of this like year long tear down, basically demo and rebuild that was so bad again. And when Jimmy came over to go to lunch in the middle of the whole thing, I said, "Come over, we'll go to lunch." He came over. He literally walked through the house and he just went, I don't get why you don't just tear the whole thing down to the ground. Like, wouldn't it be faster and easier just to do that compared to all that you're doing, which was demoralizing at the time. But we got to the very end. And at the very end, I was out of money. It took way too long. And it cost way too much. And we didn't know if Loveline, the TV show, was going to get picked up for another year or not. They were waiting to hear whether MTV was going to pick it up. And the future, as far as income, was a little bit precarious. And we got to the very end, and my accountant said, we're out of money, and you need to buy the appliances for the kitchen, the stovetop, the refrigerator, a dishwasher. And he said to me, like, go to Sears and, you know, pick something out, an avocado, you know, see if you can save some money.
Get a floor model.
Yeah. And I said, no, I want the Viking stove and the Sub-Zero refrigerator. And he's like, you get all that shit, it's like $18,000 that you don't have. And I said, I'm at the very end of this build on this house. Everything is spectacular. I don't want. Now, by the way, this is back in the day. This is, you know, 20 years plus ago. You couldn't go to Home Depot and get some decent looking stainless steel stuff that was close enough. There was a big chasm between the Viking stuff, the Sub-Zero stuff, or just the Kenmore shit that was just white and beige and looked tinny and shitty. You know, they didn't have a kind of middle ground. You were either all in with the super high end shit or you were
all out,
all out. Oh. And I said to him, I said, you know, I took like a small appliance loan. I literally, they had some sort of program where you could take a loan to get, but wow. I said, listen, I'm going to bet on myself. I'm going to get this. I don't want to live with the tinny, lightweight shit. Loveline, if Loveline gets picked up, if the radio keeps going, I don't want to have to replace this shit in two years. I'm going in. I'll make it work. And I bought the expensive shit, even though I was out of money. Loveline got picked up. The rest is history. Do you have that Social Security thing? Maybe we'll put it up there. But it's fairly dramatic if you look at the column there, on the right.
Wow.
My total income at nine, I had a zero in 91. In 92, I had $3,500. In 93,
yeah, what happened in 85? In 91.
85 is when I put the addition on my grandparents' house. I built them a kitchen, and my grandma paid me $10 an hour under the table
gotcha.
For like a year to put an addition on her house. So I never technically had a job that year. I remember every Friday I'd go to my grandmother and go, well, it's payday. She'd go, all right, what do I owe you? And I'd go, well, you know, $10 an hour. Times 40, that's $400. And she'd go, yeah, you didn't get here till like 9:30 on Wednesday. And I'd go, well, yeah, but I stayed a little longer. Yeah, but not that much longer.
Wow.
You were out at like 5. I was like,
honest.
Yeah. And she was like, and then grandpa made you a sandwich on Tuesday. So we got to back out,
back,
back those cold cuts out. Like he would fucking haggle. Listen, is it not enough that I'm poor already, grandma? Is it not enough that I've been beat down by the semblance of a family that we have to now haggle over the couple of shekels you're going to give me at the end of the fucking week every week? But we would argue about how many hours I worked every week. And even though I built her a full kitchen for $10 an hour, just straight away, yeah. $10 an hour. 94, I made $6,442.
As far as the government knows.
Yeah. As far as the government knows. In 95, I made $36,000. And then 96 is where I made $316,000. So it picked up a little bit. Picked up a little bit there. All right. Yeah, you can see this on youtube.com/Adam Carolla. Oh, there you go. All right. Let's see. Let me tell you. Yeah, JB Weld. We love our friends at JB Weld. We use their products all the time. I was just doing a little project with my boy Sonny and a little JB Weld. Now, I was repairing a tennis shoe, by the way, and I don't think here's what I want everyone to understand. You got to use the right tool for the right job, but you got to get the right adhesive for the right job. If you're fixing a tennis shoe, you don't want to use epoxy. You want to use this JB Weld. It's high temp silicone, but you can use any JB Weld silicone. But the point is like, If your shoe, if the sole of your shoe is delaminating and like coming undone, you don't want to put a glue that's going to dry hard in that because it's going to crack and pop. You want something that's flexible. So, oh, Dawson just did it to his shoe.
I just fixed this shoe last night with JB Weld because the sole was coming out. It had totally split around the edges.
What?
And...
wow.
It was the easy, and these shoes, I just bought them in a few years.
The Who loafers?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Use a silicone, I hope?
It's the only one I had, but it said it was good on rubber.
Oh, okay.
So
it's probably
go.
The silicone. The Who? Yeah. So these guys are great sponsors, and Father's Day is coming up. So get a little father-son project going, and I just want to thank them for sponsoring the show. JB Weld is available at jbweld.com and Home Depot, Lowe's, AutoZone, Advance Auto Parts. And although it's My paper said Advance Auto Parts, which I would definitely hang out, but I'm going with parts. O'Reilly, Walmart, Amazon, Michaels, and more. It is J.B. Weld. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come right back with some calls, and I have some other thoughts right after this.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Hey, Ace Man, just saw a digital sign over the freeways that said, "The only cure for litter is you."
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Well, it's a lot better than click it or ticket, but my thing with people who litter, I just feel like they litter. I don't think they need to. Does anyone need to remind you not to litter?
No.
Oh, it's a lifestyle.
That's right. And then if you do, in fact, litter, how are you dissuaded from littering by the sign? There's a certain breed of cat who litters, and they drive me nuts. I because it always, to me, it transcends littering. It stands for everything, who they are. Like, I'm done with this rapper. Let the world deal with it. They're kind of the people who...
Not my problem. Whoop.
Right. They miss their turn. So from the left lane, not from the left turn lane, from the left lane, they just stop and go, "I'm going to just stop," while cars pile up behind them. And it's like, "Hey, dude, just go forward and turn left on the next side street." And the answer to the world, whether it's litter or turning left from the wrong lane, is, "But I want to do this." And that's what drives me nuts.
Yes. The only people that can be talked out of this lifestyle, ironically, to prevent these adults are children. Arrest this behavior early, and you can stop these adults from becoming monsters.
Right. It's funny, though. I was just thinking about that because we got the little one to pick up trash, because one time he saw me do it and he goes, "That's not our trash." And I said, "Yeah, but it's our park."
Right.
So we got him cleaning. But how many times, Brian, has Tessa gone for some trash on the street? You go, "Don't touch that. Don't touch that."
All the time.
Because, yeah, we do, too.
Like I said, the hero in my world is Paulette Geragos, who I saw walking down the street picking up random garbage 10 blocks from her house, and she didn't even know I was watching. Yeah, Max Patty, you had an Uber driver just threw all his junk out the window?
Yeah, I was on the way to the Burbank Airport from here, and he pulls away from the warehouse, goes into that corner, that street, the famous trash street that you talk about,
right. Mm-hmm.
Stops the car, street. Rolls open his sunroof, just takes a bag full of all this stuff he got at the liquor store, empty iced tea bottles, candy wrappers, and just hucks it into the trash and drives away.
He might have thought it was the city dump. I mean, he just took a look at it.
Very possible, but it was appalling.
He didn't throw it into the trash. He threw it into the pile that's always by the side of the freeway, right?
Right. Yeah. It was onto the ground, like on the curb, the street.
It's also so weird to do in front of other people, right?
Somebody who's physically going to rate you.
It feels so egregious.
I tell you, if I wasn't late for my flight, I would have said something.
Well, I did like, it wasn't you. I think it was Matt D'Andrea, who's Uber driver from here to the airport, stopped to fill up on gas.
Yeah.
And speaking of filling up on gas, it's something that's been stuck in my head, and I haven't brought it up, but I keep wanting to bring it up, which is when I was tooling around Houston, I was looking at prices at gas stations, like $1.65 a gallon.
Yeah.
I was just driving around my warehouse. I saw like an Exxon was like $3.27 a gallon. Like, does California need to be twice as expensive for everything all the time? Like gas. Why can't our gas just be, why can't it be a buck a gallon more? Why does it have to be twice what Texas is? Like, you want to talk about alluring, and especially for people who don't have a lot of money. And the thing about gas is I fill up the tank of my car. It's, I don't know, $90. I really don't care. I have enough money. It's really impactful if you're poor, and we don't have public transportation, and a lot of these poor people are like gardeners and people who work on your house, and they have to load up their truck and go, and they don't live in your neighborhood. They may live in the deep San Fernando Valley. That gas being twice as much as it could be impacts them greatly. Yes,
that's their livelihood. Their vehicles, their livelihood.
I know. Why? why does California have to be twice as much as Texas? Or and then I was in Tennessee the other week, and it was like last week it was like $1.86 or something. But nationally, much of the gas starts with a one.
Yeah,
ours starts with a three.
It's because we have such high gas taxes, so we can have these perfect, pristine roads with
and schools and roads,
beautiful, sparkling utopia.
But you get what you pay for, Adam.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. When you drive around Tennessee, the roads seem much better than our roads, and it's like, okay, all I'm saying is perhaps the part where you get more money for something. That straight line where you go, we need to fix our school systems. We need more money. We need to fix our roads. We got to charge more for gas. I don't think any of us would have a problem if we saw something coming out the other side. If we went, I'll pay a little more in taxes as long as those kids in the inner city get a top-notch education, then so be it. And we're going to save later on. They don't fall into gangs and go to prisons and blah, blah, and get parole officers. Fine. If I saw things coming out the other end, I'd be down with it. I don't trust them. I feel like what we have in California is we pay gas that starts with a three. Many other cities and states have gas that starts with a one. And when I travel through their highways and byways, they look nicer than ours. So there you go.
That's about it.
Down to Wilshire Boulevard, one of the busiest streets in this entire city. It's a goddamn pothole farm.
Messed my car up so bad. Yeah,
everyone's had their car messed up on Wilshire Boulevard.
Oh, I had to switch vehicles because I was like popping too many tires. Because if you drive something with a low profile tire, you'll just pop it. All right. We had a call up there. Brandon, line two. Brandon. 37.
Yes.
Newcastle.
Yes, sir. How you doing, Adam?
Good. Is that Indiana?
Yes, sir.
What's going on?
Not much. You're very funny. I caught you on The Fighter and the Kid a week or two ago. That was pretty good.
Oh, thank you.
I wanted to know, what's your take on the Chris D'Elia situation?
I don't know a ton about it. Other than what I've heard, little bits and pieces, I sometimes come in here and ask the kids what's going on because I'm a little out of the loop. I know Chris personally a bit. I wouldn't call him a friend. I don't really know him well. I know he's come on this show and been very funny and been quite nice to deal with. I've done a few. I think we've done a live show or two with him, and he's obviously been on a guest on this show a few times. So he's always been nice to me. I have no idea what his status ever was. I didn't know if he was married or dating or gay or straight or anything. And I guess the allegations are what? The allegations are that he was grooming young girls?
Well, so basically soliciting sexual favors, so to speak. Because of his celebrity status or something like that.
What is the grooming part of this? Because that's what I heard.
Yeah, I think that was like setting them up. I don't know exactly.
Well, what is that term, Maxipati? Underage?
So the allegations or accusations are a bunch of girls who are of age now, but they'll post screenshots of them talking to him years ago where they were exchanging emails, texts, Facebook messages of Chris asking them to come up to his room or backstage or meet up with him privately and then ask for nude pictures or things like
but
that.
But are there ages on – how would one know their age?
So in some of the screenshots, he's asking, how old are you? Are you under 18?
Are you under 18?
Yeah. He's, I don't know if he's checking or if he's asking because it's a preference, but he does ask in some of the screenshots for their age, and all the girls are admitting that they were 16, 17 when this happened. They all happen to be around that age.
But are they telling him, so my gray area part is sort of like, I don't know if anyone ever saw Raging Bull, you know, the chicks are trying to get in the club. He's kissing them at the front door. Later on, he's getting busted by the cops because they were 15, but they look like they were 23. Like, I don't know. My whole thing is if someone is, you know, when you watch Catch a Predator, Those guys are going after what they know are underage girls, right?
That's the point.
Right, that's the point. But if you're saying, are you under 18, as in I will not see you if you're under 18, which is a kind of a reverse engineering of are you over 18, but it's kind of right. The same question. I guess it could probably be answered by just asking how old you are, because it doesn't carry on into your adult life. Like, I don't go, excuse me, are you over 34 or under 34? I would just go,
how dare you?
How old are you, Brandon? Are you over 38? Are you under 38? Yeah, it's not a habit you bring into your adult life. So if he is engaging in this with underage girls, then that's knowingly, then right. That's a big issue.
Yeah, so a lot of these screenshots are from girls who ended up saying no to him. Or, but I'm not seeing much about anybody who actually says they went all the way through. Well, and also, Chris responded to TMZ saying that he never knowingly pursued any underage women at any point. And if you're asking what his status is, he's not married. He was divorced in 2010, but he did just have his first kid in February.
Well, that's about all I know. So my thing is. If you know they're, look, if you're a single dude and you're traveling and you're going from town to town and you're a star and you want to hook up, then hook up. If they want to hook up, it's consensual and they're 18 or over. And if they're not, then we have an issue. And then if they lied, I mean, I don't know. What about fake ID? Like, what if somebody has a fake ID that says I'm 21 and they're 17 and you're the liquor store owner? You know what I mean? And he sold them booze and they got into a car crash. Like, I don't know who this is on at a certain point. But to me, if you know they're underage, that's an issue. If not, then it's consensual adults having sex.
Now, Adam,
well, just FYI, I'm looking at a bunch of the tweets, the screenshots that people are posting. And one of them is between him and this girl, possibly this girl named Abby, that I'm looking at Twitter. And he's in Colorado. She lives in Colorado. And he's saying, like, yeah, let's meet up. Wait, how old are you? And she says, 17. And he goes, ah, too young. And I'm leaving tomorrow. So it's something he seemed to be conscious of at least once.
All right. So he made the right.
Yeah, but he's taking
choice.
A lot of heat over this. That's kind of, I'm a fan of his. And he's taken quite a beating on Twitter over it.
Well, one activity is illegal and the other activity is as old as Hollywood is, right? Like, or as
Absolutely.
Old as males sure. have been around, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so one of them is makes you creepy, but it doesn't make you a criminal, and the other makes you a criminal. So for me, I'd need to know that he mm-hmm. was engaging in criminal behavior, because if you just want to get into creepy behavior, now that's many comedians and many actors and many producers, especially. Yes.
More importantly, Brandon, as a resident of Indiana, do you know John Mellencamp?
No, I do not, but we hear a lot about him.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Brandon, and thanks for bringing that up.
A lot of people are talking about Chris. His most recent role was in that Netflix hit show, You, as a comedian who was grooming underage girls and talking to underage girls. So it's really odd that he would pick a character.
The role he was born to play.
Hiding in plain sight.
Yeah. I don't know. How does that work, though? Like, that he would pick the character. Like, and again, like, did he try out? And did he audition? Did they come to him? Did they offer him a role? I mean, every role is like, I mean, not every role, but half the roles are serial killer, you know, crazy dentist. You know what I mean?
What like, I was gonna say, we've all heard interviews with Anthony Hopkins that say people cross the street when they see him coming. So maybe this is just the Mandela effect.
Yeah, I wouldn't put a whole lot of stock in the role they played. Mm-hmm. But look, it's a pretty simple equation. You can do whatever you want with whomever you want and be as creepy as you want. I mean, you don't think road comics are, you know, what do you think Artie Lang was up to the whole time he was on the road? Or
think about Louis C.K.
Jim Norton, for the love of Christ. I mean, there's so many people that just engage in this behavior when they're on the road. The question is are you doing it with underage people? That's the only question. If everyone is of age and they're consenting, then it doesn't matter what role you played. Yes, Brian, sorry.
No, I agree. I'd say exactly. If it's a pencil thin line, but it's a line. That's where it says yes or no.
All right. See if we can get him booked to do Jean-Claude Van Damme, and I'll ask him these questions, but he'll answer as Jean-Claude on the show, makes me laugh. All right. Let me hit. I'm going to tell you guys I have a hot Silcock talk. I'll tell you about that in a second. Let me hit Bet Online. Sports, man, they're slowly coming back. UFC, NASCAR, boxing, soccer. Bet Online has the best odds and lines for upcoming games. Need more? Bet Online has simulated NFL, NBA, and UFC daily. Also, casino games, poker tournaments you can get in on, and some of the best props in the business. So if you are at home, you're a little bored, you want to get in on some of the action, and like, yeah, NASCAR is back. UFC's back. Boxing is back. Visit betonline.ag. Use your mobile device with the promo code podcast1 so you can visit betonline.ag, or you can use that mobile device. Use the promo code podcast1. Sign up for your bonus and get to getting, man. That's betonline.ag, our exclusive partner at podcast1. And don't forget promo code podcast1 for your sign up bonus today. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. I have a pet peeve, and I'm wondering if it's a way to kind of universally measure people, and much like we're talking about, the little tells, like we're talking about littering a few minutes ago, you know, that's kind of a tell. Banging underage chicks, that's kind of a tell. You know, these are global things, you know. And I, like the guy, the Uber driver who picked up Maxipad and threw all the shit out of the sunroof of his Honda, you wouldn't want that guy to be your roommate, right?
No. We know everything we need to know about that guy.
Right. There is a thing. It's not quite as nefarious as this, and it reminded me because I was doing Adam Carolla's Unprepared from quarantine with Adam Ray the other day.
Yeah.
And I don't know, is that up on SiriusXM or is that thing up?
SiriusXM, and we're going to be putting the whole thing up on YouTube as well.
And we're having fun, and Adam Ray was great. We're doing it from my home theater. But at some point, the word Silcock came up, and...
didn't know they came in silk.
I don't know what a silcock is.
Silicone cock?
No, S-I-L-C-O-C-K. Silcock. And I don't know what that is. So but, you know, by law, I had to do a bit on silcock, but I don't know what silcock is. Sort of reminds me of the time I was 26 and I was doing a group improv, and they said, give us an activity. And they said, you're at a bris. And they said, I'm from North Hollywood. I grew up with fucking Ray and Chris. I'm 26. I don't know what at a bris means. I go, okay, you're at a bris. Here we go. Lights up. And I was wandering through this improv scene, not knowing where I was. And the other three people on stage all knew what a bris was. And I couldn't raise my hand and ask where we were. So anyway, and that was in front of an audience, too. Silcock is what I would call a hose bib, the outside nozzle, I guess. Chris,
I feel like that's something you should know or
looked it up. I would guess it's a regional thing. So out here, hose bib, maybe in the East Coast, it'd be a silcock. There's a ball cock valve. I'm aware of what a ball cock valve is. Also, it must be ball cock and silcock mean valve. But the point, ball and sill and cock, but the point is this.
Okay.
Out here, the 2x4 stud that's next to the king stud is called a trimmer. If you talk to East Coast guys, it's called a jack stud. So there's different languages.
It's a Hellman's Best Food situation.
That's exactly what it is. A Hellman's Best Food.
Exactly.
It makes sense that it's an East Coast. East Coast or Midwest thing, because the other term for it is a frost-free silcock.
Oh, they have one.
Which
they
we
have
had that problem.
Right. So I didn't know what it was. But anyway, now I know what a silcock is, and it's what I would call Hose bib. All right, so there it says. Says Silcock. Oh, there's two L's, sorry. It says Silcock, and then it says hose bib. Fine. Now, here's my little test. I was noticing that there's two types of people on this planet. And you tell me if this is a global thing. I noticed it at home, and I noticed it here the other day. I have hoses that have the hard sprayer nozzle at the end so that you can turn the hose on, but nothing will come out. It always leaks a little bit, and it always sprays a little bit right where the washer is, where it screws
on. It's not going to come gushing out.
It doesn't come gushing out, but it'll leak a little where it screws on to the hose bib, where the hose screws on to the thing. That washer's always a little bad, connection a little bad. There's a light spray there, and then it'll dribble out the end. It's all about 110 pounds of pressure and an old kind of gasket where the thing screws on. It always leaks. There are two types of human beings. They're the types that turn it on, use the hose for whatever you told them to do, hose down the driveway, whatever, and then leave and never shut it off. There's a lot of those fuckers running around.
I didn't know those people existed.
Oh,
really?
Oh, are you kidding me? It's all
Isn't
day.
Is that bad for your pipes and connections?
And it bursts?
It's a way of thinking. So I just...
That's crazy.
And so what I always do is I just walk up and grab it, and it sprays out full blast. And like, okay, they left on. So I noticed it. I've noticed it with people, employees. Kids do it. My daughter was like using the hose because it's a concrete way of thinking, which is... I turn this thing on, I use the water to clean the dog or wash down the driveway. I use this thing. Now I let it go, and there's no evidence that it's still on. The only evidence is I turned it on, but nothing's happening now. Because
they're like a dog, when the human leaves the room, you're like, well, they're gone forever.
Right. That's what it is. So I walked in and I noticed it at my house. I was like, all right, this is my daughter. This is what kids do. But I have had a few people work for me do this. And I walked in a couple days ago, and Kalen was had the hose out in the front. He was doing that thing. And I was like, oh, good. At the end of the day, I was like, I better check that shit. And sure enough, that fucking hose was on. And it always drives me nuts because it's like... One, sometimes it's hard to detect. So all it's doing is putting pressure on the washer, the gasket, or doing fucking up the hose or doing whatever. But two, I get that it's not on now since you let go of the handle or the trigger. But you have to know you turned it on. And I think you can divide the world into one of two categories. The ones who know they've done it and do it every time. And again, you're doing it even though there's no evidence of it. The only evidence lives in your head. Do you know what I'm saying? But
yeah, absolutely. It's like what you've said about housekeeping. Like nothing's plugged in, but it's clean.
It's out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah.
Yes, I had the unpluggers. I had to deal with that yesterday. I went down to my gym. I have a fan that I turn on. It's like, got unplugged. Like somebody needed to plug something in and unplugged, never plugged back. But you guys have not experienced the heartache of this human being. I'm telling you, there is a lot of these human beings scattered all over this great land of ours.
This is the first time I've heard of it and considered it. Maybe this gets me a couple of points in your book, but what I do when I'm done with the hose, I fastidiously swirl it up. I got to get the kinks out, you know, get it swirled in the little holder. That's one thing. But you know, you probably know this, when you curl it up, when you swirl it up, there's a little bit of water that gets pressured up in there. You got to release the pressure when it's
right.
Off, you know what I mean? One last little squeeze in the planter, and we're good to go.
In the planter. Winner.
It's got to be the planter. Can't be on the ground. It's wasteful.
I had this other thought. I guess you have to get a couple businesses and a few hoses and a few pressure nozzles to experience this firsthand, but I experience it a lot. And it's an interesting mindset, but whenever Kalen comes in, we'll ask him how that works. I know how it works. How it works is you turn it on, you use it for whatever you're using it for, and then something happens and you walk away. Mm-hmm. But it still drives me insane. All right. Let's be better, people. I had a thought today. I was thinking about Ellen. But not in the way you would think. Not in the way you would think. I was doing a lot of press for the book, and I was noticing, of course, that much of the press I've been doing has been calling Fox and Friends in the morning, but no NPRs or CNNs or anything of that nature. And as I've said, when people say to me, it happens to me, it happens to Drew, it's like, why are you always going on Fox? Why don't you go on these other things? And the answer is because if you go on Fox, you're then not allowed to go on CNN. Those are the rules. So if you want to know why Dr. Drew or me or Mark Garagos pops up on Fox and not on CNN, it's because you get the stink of Fox on you and you're not allowed back to the other side. It's not really a two-way street. It's just a way. That's the climate we're living in. Last time I was on, I forgot about this. Last time I was on NPR, Brian Lehrer's show, and in 2000, and I don't know what year. I asked Matt what year I was on that show, but it's been, I got the year he won a Peabody. That was 07, and I got the year that his show started. That was 1989. What year was I on, Max Bannon? It's been 7 years, probably. Yeah. You can ask. Anyway, Matt should have provided you with that. But anyway, I did this NPR show, and he never aired it. He never aired it because, yeah, comically, he tried to bust me because Joe Coy was doing Bung Lu Su on the show, and he tried to play a gotcha moment where he played the tape and wanted to know if it was okay with me to do this voice. And when I explained to him that wasn't me and the guy did it's Asian, he then dropped it. That was 2014, and then lied to me, never aired it, and then wanted to know if I, he said I could come in and redo it if I ever wanted back to New York to redo a 1 hour interview on a book that came out that week. But
yeah, so I'm seeing there, we were told they were holding the interview while they finished up their pledge drive, and then we kept following up and they were told that they weren't going to air it at all.
All right, so I do an interview. The guy tries to do a gotcha question. He didn't do his homework. He screwed up. I explained to him, that's not me, that's Joe. And I said to him, I know what you were doing, but it didn't work out. And he's like, okay. And then he never aired it. And then when I contact him, I go, why aren't you airing this interview? He's like, we're in the middle of a pledge drive. And then I started noticing, I said, okay, well, I'll keep going. When's the pledge drive end? And then I saw John Waters did an interview, and everyone else did. Many authors did interview. I was pitching a book, and then they never aired it. And then they basically explained, we're not going to air it.
Why would he air it? He looks like a fool.
I remember NPR said, give us a response, or gave Matt a response, like it didn't meet our journalistic standards. Which is
he
a way
didn't
of saying,
meet his journalistic yeah, standards.
Which is a way of saying we fucked up.
Yeah.
So I don't like this world we're living in. I have a book to sell. I don't see why I can't go on NPR and talk about this book. But that's the world we've created. And so I had this thought. So I was doing Brian Kilmeade's Fox morning show, you know, his show again today, this morning. And he said, wouldn't it be great if everyone could have sort of handled this like Ellen when she was with George W. Bush? And they were watching the football game together, October 2019. Seems like a million years ago, right?
And last season.
I know. And there was a big dust up, and I was like, yep, yeah, Ellen got into trouble, but then she handled it nicely. And you know me, I don't lavish her with praise, but this is her and how she handled it. So here we go. It was a big enough deal that Ellen had to go on her show and confront it or address it. Sorry. Here's how she handled it.
So I want to talk about something that happened this weekend. I know it's Tuesday. Sometimes I like to ruminate on things all day Monday so that on Tuesday you hear about it. So this weekend I went to Dallas for the Cowboys game. And thanks. And it may not seem like a big deal for a celebrity to attend a football game, but I never leave my house. So it is a big deal. I go through the drive-thru at Wendy's, so I only have to see one person. I'm that kind of person. 100,000 people in this stadium. Beautiful stadium, by the way, that Dallas has. So Portia and I were invited by Charlotte Jones. She's the daughter of Jerry Jones, who owns the Dallas Cowboys. And we went because we wanted to keep up with the Joneses. So we get to sit in this very fancy suite because, you know, he owns the whole place. So his suite is fancy, and he's got fancy friends. And I don't mean fancy like Real Housewife fancy. I mean like fancy. Look, this is, I took a video of who was
all next right, to Max Baggenbrough, you can go to the part where she addresses the what her part was. Sorry. So she...
The referees, you guys, the referee. And so people were upset. They thought, why is a gay Hollywood liberal sitting next to a conservative Republican president? Didn't even notice I'm holding the brand new iPhone 11. And but a lot of people were mad, and they did what people do when they're mad. They tweet. And but here's one tweet that I loved. This person says, Ellen and George Bush together makes me have faith in America again.
All right, we can pause it.
Self-aggrandizing.
She went on to say, hey, you know, he's a friend. You can have friends you disagree with politically, and that's fine, which it's a good message. I think one we could all learn a lesson from. So Kilmeade was telling me about this. Brian was about this thing. And, you know, he was saying, I think we should all handle it like Ellen. You know, and I said, yeah, I agree with that. I think that's right. You have disagreements politically, but doesn't mean, you know, we're not one country and we can't be friends and all that kind of stuff. And then I thought about something I'd never thought about. And I don't think anyone else had ever thought about it either because of where we're living. I was like, Ellen, the super progressive lesbian who's married to a woman, got a ton of shit for sitting next to a conservative Republican. And everyone goes, yeah, yeah, man, she got a ton of shit. She had got so much shit, she had to address it. Why didn't the Christian conservatives give Bush a ton of shit for sitting next to the progressive lesbian? How come he didn't get a ton of shit? Where was all the shit he had to address? Why didn't
they're
he,
not very good at Twitter.
He didn't need to offer an apology, and no one had thought about it. Everyone's like, oh, yeah, Ellen's getting a ton of shit. She's getting a ton of shit because she sat next to this conservative. Okay, but it should be a two-way street. There should be a lot of Christians who don't think it's a good idea for a conservative to be friends, quote unquote, with a progressive lesbian. So where's all the shit he got? And he didn't get shit. That's what I'm saying. I can go on Tucker Carlson, and he doesn't care if I'm on CNN, but CNN cares if I'm on Tucker Carlson, and that's a problem. That's an issue. They either both should have not apologized, or it should have been a non-issue, or they both should have had to speak to their constituency and apologize or explain, or Bush should have had to give the same explanation. He was not required. She was required. I never even thought about that. We're all so wired in a certain way that when it was happening, I was like, oh boy, how's Ellen going to handle this? Well, what about all the, you know, super Christian, God-fearing conservative people who should have had a huge beef with Bush? Well, I didn't hear from them. So that's where we're living right now, and that's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about the counterculture becoming the culture. And when I brought this thing up to Prager, because I did Prager later on, he was like, oh my God, I've never even thought about that. It's like, well, it should be a two-way street. Both sides, parties, should be pissed that they were, the Hatfields and the McCoys were sitting up in Jerry Jones's box. And by the way, what about a daytime audience? You know, you just make the Keeping Up with the Joneses joke and the place erupts in laughter. Jesus Christ. If I said that on stage at 10 at night, someone would throw a fucking chair at me.
They'd be right to.
So they, that's all they throw?
Doesn't it, what you just said about Ellen and Bush, doesn't that kind of speak to your ideas about when you become the man? Mm-hmm. Because this is the counterculture that's now the mainstream culture. So effectively, it's the man.
Yeah, I'm just saying everything. you should be able to express your ideas on CNN and Fox equally. Now, it's never going to be there, but this notion of a guy like Dr. Drew, who's as even keeled a guy can think of, no longer being welcome on CNN is it's a sad state. A guy was on CNN for, you know, these guys, the Garaguses and the Drews of the world, and guys like me, it's like, I can't go on The View. Or if I did, I'd go on The View as set up as some sort of, you know, antagonistic argument or something like that. It's just, it's not what you're looking for as a society. Ellen and Bush should be able to sit next to each other, and that shouldn't be a controversy. And if it is, then both should need to rectify it. All right. Luke's running late, but we have some Eat Your Feelings, Gina mm-hmm. Grad. We'll cue that up in a second.
Yes, sir.
We got that, Dawson?
Gina Grad's Eat Your Feelings, brought to you by Butcher Box.
She could not stop eating the sugar and the grains. Then our friend Betty helped her lose the weight she gained. Now she's cooking healthy meals at night, and ever since then her clothes aren't as tight. It's time for Eat Your Feelings. Do some healthy eating with Gina's recipe.
I know I've thrown this around before, and I know it steams you, Adam, but I finally can prove it, at least in one version. So I created something with my little baby chef, the four-year-old, who I got a full apron and chef's hat, and he loves it. This is what we do together. We fight, we cook.
I'm sorry. I'm honest with it, with you guys. When I asked Matt Fondelier, what'd you do last weekend? And he goes, oh, I was in a jacuzzi with my dad having daiquiris. I go, ugh. But I'm not saying it. I'm saying it because I'm jealous.
Right. Understood.
I wish I had a little chef hat, a mini apron when I was four.
He's my little guy. And, you know, we are constantly looking for the things that he seems interested in and trying to foster that. So I call him chef. I say, yes, chef, no, chef, and really get him involved. And we made something together that I call almost enchiladas, because enchiladas, top three favorite foods in the world.
Oh my God.
Cheese enchiladas.
I had cheese enchiladas with mole sauce the other day, just because I was like, I said to Sonny, I want full James Caan. I was like, I just finished this fucking book. This is my fifth book. It's out today. We're going out and we're getting enchiladas with mole sauce. Daddy is going to enjoy his ass. So I literally just had this.
I've never had cheese enchiladas with mole.
The best.
Oh, okay. So this, I'm going to really quickly throw out the foolproof, are you kidding me version, and then I'll tell you how we judged it up. But literally, if you had no time and no inclination to cook and just felt like proving something to yourself that you could sling something together, you could literally, we took Butcher Box chicken breast that was thawed. We threw it whole in the slow cooker, and this will come right after the slow cooker. You could literally thawed chicken, a jar of salsa, set it and forget it for 4 hours. Nothing else.
That's it in the slow cooker?
That's all you have to do if you don't feel like doing anything else.
You got to put water in there?
No.
It's just literally the chicken in a jar of salt. Wow.
Yes. And after that, you take it out, you shred it, you know, with the fork, and then sprinkle some grated cheese over the top, broil it. A beautiful enchilada casserole. Now, with mine, I added roasted pasilla pepper, red pepper, and a can of diced chilies, and a little bit of sour cream, but essentially the same thing. While the chicken and the salsa's in the slow cooker with a little seasoning, I love whole seed cumin, not that cumin powder crap. Whole seed cumin is the greatest, smokiest, Tex-Mexiest flavor with a little habanero powder, a little garlic salt, a little oregano. And then you just put that on the chicken, slow cook it for 4 hours on high. While you're doing that, we went to the park, whatever, and then came back, roasted the peppers.
Can I ask this? Yes. And I'm asking, I'm legitimately asking. This is sure. not even earnestly bigot asking. Is it politically incorrect to yes. call a chef with Down syndrome a slow cooker? Would that be out of bounds? Where's Ellen's audience when I need them?
I'll do my due diligence and I'll get back.
Please look that up. Thank you.
So literally just threw it in and then sauteed onion, a can of diced chilies and a pasilla pepper and a red pepper. And go, move through the pictures, please. So sprinkled some cheese on top, a little bit extra salsa, threw it in the oven, keep going. And then just this, you did not miss the tortilla. Keep going.
You made like a casserole.
A casserole, but I cut them long. Mm. Keep going. I cut them long so they kind of resembled enchiladas. And the crowd went wild, a little dollop of sour cream on top. Scrumptious, delicious, so good. We've had it like 3 times in the past week and a half. And he gets to participate and he'll eat it because he made it. And it was just, oh, and also because I throw it in everything and he doesn't know it. He thinks it's rice. I always add a bag of frozen cauliflower. I microwave it, wring it out really good so it doesn't get watery. Wring it out and mix it into the chicken. That way you get your vegetables and nobody has to know about it. Mm. So these are my almost enchiladas.
Nice, Gina Grad.
Yes, they'll be on the grainfreecomfortfood.com. That's my website, grainfreecomfortfood.com, and Grain Free Comfort Food Instagram shortly. Reach your
feelings. Brought to you by Butcher Box.
Do some healthy eating with Gina's recipes.
All right, so just go to butcherbox.com/Adam and get all the info and the savings. I eat them almost every night. All right. Country superstar Luke Bryan is going to be on, and I think we're just going to keep him and go through the news with him
yep.
as well. And we'll do that right after this.